D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. Predators versus Ducks to kick off a five-game homestand tonight. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. Barry Trotz, Predators GM, will join us here at Barrel House in 1 hour at 5 o'clock. Trevor Maddich will join us in roughly 20 minutes. Also, be listening for the cue to call, because I have a four-pack of tickets to give away to the Tennessee Volunteers, Tennessee Volunteers intra-squad scrimmage at First Horizon Park this Sunday, if I could spit it out. So be listening for the cue to call at 615-737-1025, and you'll be able to win a four-pack of tickets to see the Vols play an intra-squad game at First Horizon Park this weekend.
And we'll see who's coaching.
Tony Vitello is still coaching.
I think he's going to be the manager of the Giants by then.
We'll see. Are there new reports today? I haven't seen any.
The speculation is it's still going to happen, that he is going to go to the Giants. But he keeps showing up at the practices.
Good for him.
Hey, he's still employed.
Taking it all the way to the end. I guess no hard feelings on either side.
You have to respect it. So before each Titan season, Willie Donick has a list of 10 questions that he asks all of us. And these questions, he feels, are critical to determining how successful the Tennessee Titans are going to be. Well, the Titans are 1-6, so they're not very successful. But Willie pulled out the scrolls. He pulled a few of those questions out. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a bit terrified by some of my responses from before the season. So, Willie, which questions did you pull out? Let's get started.
I think the design of these questions, as we discussed, after having the whole pre-camp and then watching the whole preseason, the themes of what needs to go right for them to have a season that they want to have, and if they go wrong, uh-oh. Well, you can sort of imagine where these questions are going to go.
Uh-oh.
Let me just buzz through these, okay, because there are some that we don't know yet. Cam Ward over or under 12.5 games played. We don't know how that's going to go, but right now, so far, he's played all the games. He's surviving. Calvin Ridley over or under 1,100 yards receiving. We all said over. That is not looking good. We don't know how long he's going to be out. So that one is very much questionable. Here's another one that we can't answer right now. Legarius Sneed and Tajay Spears, over or under a 17.5 games combined. I think Sneed has played more than maybe we thought he was going to. He has not missed a game so far, correct? But he's now injured. I don't know about what will happen in the next week or two, and Spears is now back.
By the way, Calvin Ridley is on pace for 821.7 yards per 17 games.
Okay.
So way under based on what we've seen so far.
Here are a couple of interesting ones. I think the most – well, and here's one that I think we can answer very quickly. Mm-hmm. Will the Titans have league-average special teams?
No.
Adam said no. D-Mace and I said yes. I think they have been league-average. I think DK is doing well. I haven't looked to verify. There's different ways to quantify that.
League-average.
Yes.
Across the board.
So night and day. They've made marked improvement there under Bones Fossil. I think we'd all agree.
Yep.
Okay, so let's get to the ones that I think are the really defining ones.
Oh, God.
Over or under 42.5 sacks allowed, which would be slightly over league average, but a cut down from where they have been. All of us did not have faith that they would be able to. We all thought they would allow more than 42.5. It's a good thing we said that, because they have already allowed 30.
Damn.
30. Cam Ward is the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. 30 through 6 weeks. They're 1-5, is that right?
1-6.
1-6. Wow. So 7 weeks.
So they've allowed an average of 4.3 sacks per game. Which puts them on a pace for 73 sacks allowed.
And keep in mind that Mason Rudolph was one of the best quarterbacks in the league at not taking sacks last year, and he quarterbacked a number of the games. So we can conclude, again, that Cam Ward's numbers look a little too similar to Will Levis than we would like to see at this time.
Yes.
I mean, it's reality. It's the numbers.
At least it's not 100 like who, the Eagles? Was it the Eagles?
Randall Cunningham.
The Buddy Ryan Eagles of the 86, I think it was. After he left the Bears, they wanted – he allowed his quarterbacks to get hammered. Randall Cunningham and Ron Jaworski.
Oh, man.
Okay, so let's talk about Titan sacks. This was an Adam question, actually. Over or under 32.5 for the season? I said over. D-Mace said over. Adam said under. Right now, the Titans have 13 sacks.
13 sacks in 7 games?
Yes. So it is going to be close.
Yeah, it's going to be close.
So they're on pace for 31.6.
Oh, boy. And Jeffrey Simmons is out.
Yeah,
Jeffrey Simmons is hurt.
But Big Tavondre got a sack last week.
Meatloaf got a sack.
Exactly.
He did get a sack. He got a sack. All right, here's an intriguing one. More combined receiving yards. Ooh. A, this group of youngsters. Jim DK, Alec Isle Manor, Gunnar Helm, the 3 fourth-round picks. And we threw in as a little bonus Bryce Oliver, who's been hurt most of the time. He has 8 yards.
Well, he hadn't factored in.
He has 1 catch for 8 yards. And then the veteran placeholders. Tyler Lockett, Van Jefferson, and Chig. Tyler Lockett, of course, this week got the pink slip. Or, I guess, requested to get out of there. It's a mutual, you're out of here. So here's where we're at after 7 games. By the way, I said the youngsters would have more receiving yards for the season.
You did.
Yes, you did.
You guys thought it would be the veteran placeholder. Yes.
Wrong.
Well, we're not wrong yet.
It's closer than you might think. 478 for the youngsters. 428
for the
veterans. Surprisingly, Van Jefferson's got
some
yards.
That's who we need to come on. Exactly.
Yeah,
Van,
that's how you
on.
Guys. Now, remember, Lockett will not get any for the rest of the time. So you're down to Chig and Van.
So we can't count his numbers on the other team?
God, that's just so sad.
So
thinking about this Titans receiving core for this upcoming game.
But that is kind of a ray of hope, don't
yeah,
you think?
It is.
That it's
it
the
is.
Young guys yeah. that have seized the
exactly.
jobs and look like they might.
The experience they've gained.
They might be a portion of a good receiving core someday. If you get, you said it yesterday,
yeah.
D-Mace, if you can get the alpha to go with these guys. And we took Ridley out of the mix for these purposes.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what kind of material do you have in this young receiving corps that was kind of a buzz
exactly.
in the preseason? So I think those guys are doing all right.
Yeah.
If you throw DK's numbers on special teams,
they're doing even better than all right.
He's a keeper.
Yes.
And Helm looks good, I think.
Yes.
And Iron Manor, that one could go either way for me in terms of what you expect. Like, there's too many balls that he's close to but doesn't get. Mm-hmm. Like, he hasn't gone to a next level since the beginning of the year. That one has gone up and down. But you've got something there, right? He's out
yes.
there. Here's another one. Will Jeffrey Simmons be on the Titans all season? All three of us said yes. My thinking at the time was they would not have the guts to shop him. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a big story, and I think we're going to talk about this before the week is over. Because Diana Russini said, everybody but Jeffrey Simmons and Cam Ward, basically, are on the block. Why would they not at least be shopping Jeffrey Simmons around just to see what you could get, if nothing else, if you don't like what you get? But is that an Amy Adams shrunk saying you're not allowed to trade Jeffrey Simmons?
If the message is being put out there like that, then yes. It has, because that has to come from the chop. The GM can't say, oh, he's completely, because the owner is like, well, what if I want it, you know? So I'm sure she's approaching it like this.
She's afraid to look bad.
Jeffrey Simmons is the only bright spot or star on my team.
Right.
Right now. So I can't, like, she
right.
can't get rid of
him. Did you see the Titans defense on Sunday when Jeffrey Simmons
exactly.
had to leave
yes.
the game?
Absolutely.
But yikes. They're getting beat anyway.
Yes.
They shouldn't have a win.
I completely agree. I'm just saying that's what Amy Adams Strunk might be thinking.
Right. I think that's not the right long-term thinking, if you ask me. I think the best way to build your roster back is, because of the stage he's at in his career, to see if you can get a windfall. If you can't, then you can always hang on. You don't have to trade him. Mm-hmm. At least shop him around and see what the market is. Of course, he's got a hamstring injury now. So we did ask this question. These are all questions we asked before
yes.
the season started. And here we are. Intriguing. Here's another one. Will Cam Ward finish in the top three of Offensive Rookie of the Year voting?
Nope.
At the time, he was odds makers.
Yes.
In the preseason, had him in the top three.
Yes.
I'm not going to say nope because we have
you two both said yes.
Yes.
You two both said yes.
I'm not going to completely say no.
Are you kidding me? You think he can get the top three between now and then? He's the lowest rated quarter. He's 30th out of 31 in all the stats.
I'm going to pull up the current odds for this award.
He doesn't have to be better than the current. He just has to be better than the rookie quarterbacks. That's it.
No, it's
the
offensive players.
That's what I'm saying. Just be better than the rookie offensive players. That's all. Just be better than them.
Jackson Dart already is going to be getting more attention. He's in New York.
Yes, I get it. But Jackson Dart isn't playing as great as
people
think he is.
No, but that's just one. Then you got Genty.
And then Scattaboo was there. He's going to be throwing in. What's the wide receiver from Tampa?
Egbuka.
He's going to be in there.
Having a really good year.
So
that's not happening. He's not going to get in the top three.
I'm telling you, these guys are going to hit that rookie wall. Everybody forgetting about that rookie wall,
that
right?
Is wishful thinking. There's
Everybody's
no
gonna
way.
Hit that rookie wall.
Adam, you're not as optimistic. I can tell you're punting
and
on
Cam.
This. You know you're. He's got, I'm
not
gonna
saying
get that right.
I didn't say he was gonna win it, but I think he has an opportunity to get in top three.
No way.
Yes.
It ain't happening.
How many games we got left?
A lot.
Thank you.
I know. I know when I've been defeated.
No, I'm fighting this out. It ain't. That's it for the season. I didn't say. Six games in, so we got a long way to go.
Hold on. All right, here are the current odds for Offensive Rookie of the Year on ESPN Bet. Jackson Dart is the favorite,
of course,
at -115. Emeka Egbuka,
yes,
+225. Tyler Warren, +650.
Warren, I forgot about him. Oh boy,
Tyler Warren +650.
Yeah, he is balling.
Quinshon Judkins,
yes,
+1300. Tet McMillan, +1300. Ashton Genty, +1800. Cam Scataboo, +2200. Notice who I haven't said yet. Travis Hunter, +2500. Dylan Gabriel, +8000. Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, +8000. Cam Ward, +10000.
But that's the win. But again, wording. Wording is very key in anything that you do or say.
That's the win. That's not the top three.
One, so go ahead and give it. Those numbers are the numbers right now.
7, 8, 9, 10. He's 11th in odds. 11th.
There's still a chance. That's all I'm saying.
There are 10 players in front of him.
There's still a chance. We said top three. Now who wins?
I'm giving up.
I'm not
winning. I'm giving up.
Okay, so this is the last one. What will the Titans' record be?
Ooh.
Donick and Fingan were in agreement.
At 5-12.
Was I more optimistic than that?
Of course you were, D-Day. 6-11.
Oh, one six game. And 11. One game six more. That's so we all in the same boat.
Five's looking like a pretty high mountain right now, the way they're playing.
I said, surely they can't be as bad as they were last year.
Hold my beer.
Or so we thought. We are going to have to unpack Derek Mason's faith in Cam Ward in this Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Oh, we can.
We'll get to it. We have a lot of time to discuss these things.
Yes.
One texter says, not even close to being top three.
Okay.
I would agree with that.
All right, listen.
It will be a big story if he even gets into the conversation of the top.
Listen, they thought
it'd be a great turnaround.
You know what? Last week, Denver was playing, and the team thought they beat Denver. And what happened? Denver came back 20 seconds left. Well, 40 seconds, somewhere around there. They came back and they kicked a 61-yard field goal. Was it a 61 or did they get closer than that? I think they may have get close. Yeah, they got closer than that. But that game was all but over with. The crowd was – the other team was, and what happened? The game's not over with.
That's right.
It's not over with.
Jackson on our text line says he can get in the top three, but it won't be easy. Where was Knicks this time last year? Not in the top three, I'll tell you that. I don't know if I can find that out for you.
Hey, man, I'm not saying – Willie's answer didn't say – he was going to win the rookie of the year.
But we're not talking
about was the right question.
Right. But it would be one thing if I just read those odds and he was like fifth. He was on the cusp. He's 11th in the odds.
He's a dark horse, okay? A long shot, okay?
Well, now he is. Seabiscuit.
Exactly. Put your shackles on Cam Ward, okay? Put about 100 shackles on him.
Hey, it'd be a great story.
Yeah.
Now.
Oh, go ahead.
But it
a shekel. I mean money, people, not actual change, okay?
Right, I'm talking to money people. Right.
Shekels. With an E. Shekels.
I call them shackles.
We thought that if he finished in the top three or close to it, that would mean he had a good first season. Mm-hmm. He's got a long way to go there. And as we said, the environment around him
isn't good.
It's awful.
Yeah,
it's about as hard as it could be right now. Hopefully they can improve that environment between now and the end of the season, and his performance will improve at least some. Enough to get him in the top three, I'm not seeing it.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Tennessee Titans. Trevor Maddich will join us coming up next. We'll get into the Titans with Trevor. 615-737-1025. But I did promise a ticket giveaway. So if you would like to attend Tennessee baseball's intra-squad scrimmage on Sunday, this coming Sunday, October 26th, at First Horizon Park, be caller number 2 at 615-737-1025, and you will win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Tennessee Volunteers intra-squad scrimmage at First Horizon Park this Sunday at 1 p.m. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, another rough game for the Tennessee Titans. Cam Ward, statistically, had a decent showing, but of course, that was overshadowed by a couple more turnovers, including another lost fumble. When you evaluate Cam Ward and the things that aren't working well for him right now, how correctable do you think those issues are?
You know, Adam, I think they are largely correctable, because the two biggest reasons that he's struggling right now are, number one, the team around him. They're just not very good. The receivers are not very dynamic. They're not getting a whole lot done. They're not making a lot of yards after the catch. They're not creating a lot of separation. And so I think that upgrading the receiver core will do wonders for Cam. Now, the other problem is that Cam is trying to win all these games. And I understand he's a professional athlete. His job as a quarterback is to do whatever it takes to help his team win. But right now, as a rookie, that actually hurts his team ability to win. And I think you take the fumble that slipped out of his hand early in the third quarter that ended up being a scoop and score for the Patriots is a great example of that. I mean, they had a play-action pass. It was a good call. Jim DK, the wide receiver, was supposed to block Chase on, the pass rusher, who it's a mismatch for the Patriots there. But all DK's supposed to do is get in front of that guy and slow him down enough, and then it looked like DK was supposed to leak out. Not sure, because DK got beat immediately, just immediately. It was just abysmal. And so here comes Chaseon running directly at Cam. Cam goes to try to throw the ball as he's backpedaling. Ball slips out of his hand, turns into a fumble. Chaseon recovers for a touchdown. Well, what should Cam have done there? Okay, not his fault that there was a pass rusher in his face immediately, right? But he needs to know what to do if that happens. If that happens, don't try to make a play anyway. If that happens, don't make a bad play worse by trying to salvage it and turn it around. You know, and this is what Cam, I think, can do to help himself and to help the team to a large degree. Because he needs to get away from this idea of he's got to go out there and make wins happen. Instead, what he's got to do is go out there and make each individual play work the way that the play caller designed it, and then let the score take care of itself. So, for example, regardless of what the score is, drop back, look around, make the right decision, throw it to the right receiver on time, accurately, and if that's enough, great. And if it's not enough, fine. Because all he's going to do at this point in his career with the team that's around him right now is try to do too much, develop bad habits himself that he will have to unlearn down the road, and actually contribute to losses, not contribute to wins. So ironically, the best thing that Cam Ward can do to maximize his rookie season is to forget about the scoreboard, forget about winning on this particular play call. What does the defense give me? What is my read? And that's exactly what I'm going to take. And if he does that, ironically, that will turn into wins down the road.
Trevor, after the game on Sunday, Kayshawn Booty, who caught a long touchdown pass from Drake May, called the secondary play of the Tennessee Titans lazy. This is not the first time this season that a Titans opponent has questioned the commitment level of the Titans. You may recall when the Colts played the Titans the first time this season, they're about to play again, Michael Pittman had a quote after the game, paraphrasing here, "Yeah, we looked at them during pregame warmups. They weren't really bouncing around a lot. They looked like they didn't want to be there." How concerned are you that the Tennessee Titans have a commitment problem?
Willie, that's a great question, because the fruit is on the tree, isn't it? You could say, yes, they have. They're playing with the vitality and the effort that they can possibly muster, and they can't do anymore. And then if they're not good enough, they're not good enough. But you don't seem to see that. And it's very rare that you see NFL opponents make statements like that. Because what they're saying when they call a team either lazy or uncommitted is something that they would never want to be said about them. They know what the ramifications will be to the team that they just did that to. And the Patriots just stomped the Titans. There was no reason to pile on. And yet Booty decided that he would go ahead and offer that. Now, is he right? Well, the fruit's on the tree, for goodness sake. The Titans were not really able to stop the Patriots for the most part. They had some good stretches, and I get it that Jeff Simmons went out in the first half with injury, and Snead went out in the third quarter, I believe, with injury. And so I understand that part. But so does Booty. And for him to say that to me is a horrific existential slam, not just to those players, but to their coaches too. Because now everybody's going to look at them as if, you know what, maybe they're not trying very hard. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they don't really want to win. Maybe they're just in it for the money. Players and coaches who are supposed to get the most out of the players, and then they have to overcome that stigma. That's a hard thing to do, and it's an awful thing to do if you're an opponent. Yeah, Booty and then Pittman for the Colts decided to do the same thing, and it's really bad that the Titans can't turn around and say, that's ridiculous. You can see the fruit on the tree. You can see the effort, and you can see that we're just not quite good enough yet. But you can see us playing hard. That's what the Titans have to be able to say, and I don't know that you can actually look at the tape and say that.
Well, you're right, Trevor, because not only do you have, basically someone, one of your peers coming out and say, hey, listen, that was just lazy football. You had it that week. You had it 2 weeks ago. But then, as a matter of fact, you had an anonymous source from the Oakland Raiders saying, that's just a bad team, man. I've never seen a team that bad.
Trevor, if you missed it, Michael Silver of The Athletic did a story. He actually came to Nashville to do the reporting before the Titans fired Brian Callahan. But he talked to an anonymous Raiders coach who said that the Titans were the worst team he has seen in the past 25 years.
So you have that. Yeah. You have, players right after you play in interviews saying, yeah, that was just lazy football, or those guys didn't seem like they wanted to play. To me, that's an indictment. If I'm Denard Wilson, man, I'm watching that tape, and I'm throwing something at the chalkboard, because that's, like you said, that's the last thing. That's not an indictment on the players. You could take it, but it's an indictment on the coaches, because you coach what you allow. And it seems like everyone is saying about this team or this defense, guys weren't ready to go. They're lazy. And that shouldn't be the case. But that wasn't my question. When I look at the New England Patriots and the Titans, I think New England is a better team, but I don't think they're 20 points better than the Titans. When you are a bad team, which the Titans are, you can't have four plays that pretty much doom you. What I'm talking about is the two missed assignments on the long touchdowns. I am talking about the Cam Ward fumble and then the kick out of bounds that ended up with them scoring one of those touchdowns in Snead's area. So when you look at this team, do you look at it from that standpoint? Because, yes, they're a bad team, but even bad teams can win games if they do what's right.
Yeah, it depends on why they're bad. Mm-hmm. If they're bad because their talent isn't good enough, or at least in certain key areas, they have to upgrade the talent because they're just going to get beat man-to-man, and whether it's a blocker or whether it's a defensive lineman trying to hold his gap or whatever it might be. And you understand that. And really, I never get mad at teams like that because you know what? Unless you're the very best in the league at what you do and you play at 100% of capability every single time, then you're going to get beat. Sorry. You're going to face somebody better than you, and you're going to get beat from time to time. And so that just happens. So I understand that part. And so as I look at the Titans, as I look at any NFL team or player, I look at it from that perspective. Is each player getting the most out of what he can do against that opponent over there? And if he is, and then he gets beat, it's like, okay, well, that's the best he could do. At least I can see him fighting. You know, show me the fight, and then everything is good. And the thing about the Titans is that they too often, they're not in the right place doing the right thing, which would force the opponent to beat them to make a play. Too often, there's no Titan around. You know, you talked about those long touchdown passes. You know, you talk about DK not putting any kind of a speed bump at all in front of Chaisson, so he ended up right in Cam Ward's face right off the bat. I mean, for goodness sake, you know, these are things that you should force it to be harder on your opponent to beat you and make you look bad, right? And this is what I worry about with the Titans. This may be the worst team in the last 25 years, but I don't see any way this is the least talented team in the last 25 years. I don't see that at all. Now, go back to a couple of years ago when I kind of made a stink when I was watching Treylon Burks, former Titans wide receiver, in practice during the offseason, in my opinion, being very lackadaisical with how he handled the ball. Not that he wasn't running full speed all the time. You don't do that in practice all the time. But when you're a receiver and that ball comes in, you've got to treat it like the Super Bowl every time, or you're going to train yourself to be lackadaisical from time to time with the ball. And that's not a good thing. And, Derek, you might disagree with me because you played that position and I didn't. But I'm extrapolating what I did as an offensive lineman where we were going walk through and half through with our technique and stuff like that. And everybody got mad at me because, you know, hey, it's just a walk through. Well, you know, not a walk through, but it wasn't a full-speed drill. The thing is, in practice, if you practice – without having the precision and the urgency of focus that this rep that the Super Bowl will depend on, whether it's a full-speed rep or a walkthrough rep, still, your technique, your footwork, where your hands are, all those things need to be urgently focused, no matter whatever speed you're going, or else you're training yourself to fail because, like the Marines say, you know, it's not, you know, when everything starts to go south, you don't perform to the level of your desire. You degrade your performance to the level of your training. That's why they train at the highest level, always. That's why, as a long snapper, for goodness sake, once in a while the holder and the kicker would want me to give them some bad snaps so they could practice bad snap drill. What would happen if the snap is bad? Well, you know, will the holder be able to get it down? Will the kicker be able to hesitate and then kick? All those things. And I always told them, get somebody else to do that. I know it's important, but I am never once ever going to give you anything other than my very best, ever, because otherwise I'm training the wrong thing. So go back to these Titans. How often do you see a Titans player either be in the wrong spot or be in the right spot doing the wrong technique without enough effort, and it makes it easy for the opponent? That's why they are what they are, and that's why opponents are saying what they're saying.
Trevor Maddux is with us. Trevor, I'm curious, as you look ahead for Vanderbilt now after the good win against LSU, how much different, what will be the key matchups as Missouri comes to town? Because looking at this game, it is like you're fighting to stay in the playoff race with all of these games that Vanderbilt's got left, and Missouri is bringing a lot to the table. So what about the matchup in your mind?
There's two things. One is that Vanderbilt's superpower is extending drives. They're one of the best in the country at third down conversion rate. A big part of that is Diego Pavia. a quarterback who's able to make plays when there aren't plays to be there, to stay even with the chains, and then to convert third and fourth down. It's just fantastic what he's done. They've got to continue to do that because this is a very good defense that they'll be facing. But the other thing is we're going to learn an awful lot about how physical Vanderbilt's defense really is. They have shown themselves to be competitive at the SEC level, at the line of scrimmage on defense and on offense, by the way, but talking defense now. And they've been very good, but the most physical team that Vanderbilt has faced was Alabama. Alabama's lead running back, Jam Miller, averaged over 6 yards per carry against them. Well, here comes Hardy, one of the best running backs in the country for Missouri, and they're going to challenge Vandy. So we're about to find out now if Vanderbilt's defense really is ready for prime time or if they still have work to do.
Let's shift the focus. Your thoughts on where Tennessee can go from here. I after losing to Alabama, Tennessee's schedule isn't going to maybe blow people away, chances to get a lot of those sexy wins. So it doesn't seem like there's room for another loss. Do they still have a pathway to get to the playoffs?
You know, I think they do. Right now they've got two losses, and that's critical. I mean, you look at two things. One is that defensively they're really good at getting after the quarterback. They're one of the best in the SEC at pressuring the quarterback, and that's important. And then their offense isn't just Joey Aguilar and the passing attack. They're also very balanced. Their rushing attack overall is very good. So they've got the chops. I mean, we can talk about the math, but they've got the chops to be able to get through it. Now, that game against Oklahoma at home is going to be tough. And then, of course, they got Vandy at home to finish the season. And so, you know, it's not going to be easy. But right now, the two losses that they have against Georgia and Alabama, the committee won't hate. And if they're able to pick up a win over Oklahoma and Vandy and finish 10-2, I don't think there's any way you can keep Tennessee out of the playoff.
Do you think it could fall to where a three-loss team with a really difficult schedule could get into the discussion for the last spot in the playoff?
You know, I think that's possible because there are some teams whose schedules are absolutely ridiculous, you know. And, I mean, you can talk about Notre Dame. They lost a couple of top 10 teams in Miami and Texas A&M to open the season. But, you know, they've got those two losses. I don't know that they can afford to lose to anybody else on the schedule without the committee hating that loss. I think you're looking at a team like Oklahoma, for example, who lost to Texas with a quarterback who came back too early, Oklahoma's did, from hand surgery. And they still have, so that's one loss for Oklahoma. But they still have Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri, LSU. Now, they could lose two of those, win three of them, and be that team that you said, Willie, that could be a three-loss team that gets in anyway because of the quality of the wins that they did get.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick. He is brought to you each week by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Adam.
615-737-1025. We will react to what Trevor had to say and more. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick is presented to you by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate at baxhomeworks.com.
What does holding him accountable besides conversation look like in how you run things?
Well, like after every practice, after every game, you know, you talk to every player, every coach. You know, as a head coach, you address the team. As a coordinator, you address, you know, one of the three phases. And then as position coaches, you address your players. And our job is to we're never criticizing the player. What we're doing, we're coaching the players. So we're trying to get the players to play to the best of their abilities week in and week out and help them be successful. That's what coaching is. And you can be hard on players, and then there's the opportunity at times you love them up. There's a lot of really good plays too. So you always got to, as players, you know, you always tell them, listen, we're not criticizing. We're not at all. It starts with us as coaches. But the most important thing is we're trying to help you and help our football team become the best team we possibly can. You be the best player. So that's what we're going to do. And hey, and listen, there's going to be some mistakes. We're playing some good football teams, some really good players. You're going to get beat from time to time. You're going to get beat. That's part of the game. Okay, it's just a matter of doing all the little things right. Okay, so that we're all on the same page doing things.
That was Titans interim head coach Mike McCoy, I believe yesterday, talking about accountability. Mm-hmm. We asked Trevor Maddich this question. Derek, I want to ask you the same question, because yesterday I pushed your button. Mm-hmm. I played that Kayshon Booty clip because I knew it would set you off about the Titans' response to his long touchdown, the lazy play from the secondary in the corners. Mm-hmm. Michael Pittman Jr., when the Colts were here, the Titans are about to go to Indianapolis, said after the game he could tell during pregame warmups that the Titans didn't want to be there. So I'm wondering if you sense if the Titans have a commitment issue and if there's anything that this coaching staff can do about it.
I don't think it would be, I think, irresponsible of me to say they have a commitment issue.
But you did hear a player on the team on the other team on Sunday basically call LeJarius Sneed and others lazy.
Yeah, but I don't think that he said lazy secondary. He said lazy corner and
secondary
safety,
room, I
safety,
believe.
Or combination.
Safety room, yeah.
Yeah, he was saying the corner and the safety were being lazy on that play.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hey, the film don't lie. Miscommunication, I don't know what it is, but neither one of y'all were playing at full speed, and he was. So he was running full speed one way, and y'all were running slowly one way, and he ran right by the both of you because there was no communication. And no one – I was always taught, if you are going to make a mistake in football, make it full speed. So at least your effort will not be questioned at all. Yeah, we may have to tell you what to do the next time or reiterate to you what you need to do, but I'm not questioning that you're not going 100 miles per hour, okay? And it doesn't seem like on that play that they were going 100 miles per hour. It seemed like they were going more 50 and Booty was going 100. But when somebody says that, I don't think then that that is an indictment of the whole team. That's an indictment on the coach. Like, if you got players that are not communicating, you have players that seem to be playing slow, you need to get somebody else in there that's going to play full speed, somebody that is going to know what to do. You can't have mistakes like that when you're a bad team, and you can't play slow when you're a bad team. You got to play fast. And that's what Booty said. They were relaxing, basically. They were, out there like it was a stroll in the park almost. But I don't think that's a team thing because Jeffrey Simmons go 100 miles per hour.
Exactly.
Jeffrey Simmons.
Cedric Gray.
Exactly. Cedric
Cody
Gray.
Cody Barton.
Cody Barton. Those
one,
young guys are going 100 miles per hour. Yeah.
Don't you think one guy can influence your perception
of the
team?
But one guy could influence. And that's why I said yesterday, maybe they got rid of the wrong guy. Maybe they got rid of the wrong guy that was, because it seems like, I'm sure the young guy wasn't an influence on the older guy. And if it seems like he's dogging it out there, and he's more than just one play, then maybe y'all got rid of the wrong player. But I'm not going to look at or have a feeling toward one guy because he's not playing at the level that we believed he could play at. He's not playing at that level. I can't then put that on the whole team because Jeffrey Simmons is playing at that level. Gray is playing at that level. Cam Ward is giving it his all. Pollard is. That offensive line, they're doing the best. So those guys are committed. It's every once in a while there's guys that, kind of are not giving 100%. And it's unfair to me to put that on the whole team. Now, I can watch Sneed and say, that wasn't 100%.
What did you think of Mike McCoy's answer there on how he preaches accountability?
Listen, you, in this business, you have to have tough skin. And when I mean tough skin, I mean like, tougher than alligator skin, like warrior skin, like whatever the toughest skin out you, that's what you got to have in this sport, because there's a bunch of alpha males running around and I know better than you. No, you don't. Yes, I do. You did this wrong. Well, you got to be able to take the criticism or take the construction and move forward and understand we all are accountable to one another. That's all McCoy is saying. We're accountable to one another, and we have to be able to do that in this building in order. You show me a good team that doesn't have accountability, and I tell you that's a lie. There's no good team out there, none. unless they just happen like one-year wonders. But there's no good team, especially the ones that are consistent, that doesn't have accountability on and can't talk to the next person, and that next person say, "Okay, I may not like it, but you're right. I got to do that." That's what I had on the teams we were on. We used to go at it all the time. You need to do this. Guys didn't take it. Was like, yeah, you go back and forth, but after that, we were done because you know what? You were right. So I need to come out and play the next play better or the next practice better.
One texter says that D-line was playing its ass off even without Simmons. Hell, it looked like the Patriots were sacrificing May in the fourth quarter. They were going to get that boy killed.
Yes, the defensive line started to pick up, and I hope that is a prequel to what's going to happen, you know, further down the line.
By the way, I don't think we received any sort of update today on Jeffrey Simmons.
We haven't.
So we'll see what happens tomorrow at practice.
Wednesday, yeah.
Yes.
If I would err on one side, it'd be he's not going to practice Wednesday, at least just to give him an extra day to rest. But if he does practice, that to me, that means he's going. You're not holding him back. So, but yeah, again, what Mike McCoy said, I think is right. You got to be able to, you know, be held accountable. And as a coaching staff, this is the part that he may be behind the eight ball in. You got to know how to approach each individual. You got to be able to talk to them and say what you need to say, but every individual isn't the same. So Brian probably had a better hand on that. And now what you're doing now is leaning on the veteran players and the coaches that have been there.
I do find it interesting, not just in football, but in all sports, how coaches go about holding different players accountable. Because, as you said, Derek, different things work for different people.
Yes.
Some players want tough love.
Yes.
Some players want a coach who is going to bark at them and be incredibly critical of them. Some players prefer a softer touch. They want to be constructively criticized, but they don't want the whip, so to speak.
I think more players fall into that category now.
The latter category.
In the last generation.
Yes.
I think there's less Bobby Knight kind of coaches out there because players have made it clear.
Too sensitive. Listen, I had Robert Lynch at Mumford High School, and boy, oh boy, whew, he would get on you. I mean, you would probably want to close your mother ears sometimes. he would get on you bad. But he loved you. He loved us all. But he would get on us. And then I had George Perlis. George Perlis told me one day, he said, "I'm going to send you back to Detroit." And he said some other things, too. If you don't. Nick Saban. What do you think I heard from Nick Saban? Same thing. I heard it. Nick Saban. Jeff. So I've had coaches that, you know, Heimerdinger. That I didn't like. Say what you're gonna say. So I mean, I don't that tough love. I embrace it. Like bring it on. Like come on. Some guys can't deal with it. You say something wrong to them, they about to cry.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. Predators general manager Barry Trotz will join us live here at Barrel House for the first time this season. We haven't had a chance to talk to Barry face to face. He's approaching the desk right now. We will bring you Barry Trotz. Yes, as always. We will bring Barry Trotz to you. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinga, 1025 The Game.